Blog Talk Radio.
I just want to ask a question. Who really cares? Save a world in despair. Who really cares?
This is Antoinette. We're on Drive On's Connection, and today we're having Judge Joe Brown as our guest. We're waiting for the judge to call in, so while we're waiting, I'm going to play another song. Let's do this one.
One can have a dream, baby. Two can make that dream so real. One can talk about being in love. Two can say how it really feels. One can worship on a star. Two can make that wish come true, yeah. One can stand alone in the dark. Two make the light shine through. It takes two, baby. It takes two, baby. Me and you. Just take two.
National anthem, you got to be something. And Marvin was something. He was really, really something.
I felt that singing it with that kind of music as the background gave me an inspiration, and I asked God that when I sang it, would he let it move men's souls?
Hey, can you see by so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleam. Through broad stripes and bright stars, through oh, the ram
I love America. You have to stay away a while to realize how great this country is.
Okay, we're still waiting for the judge. So hopefully he'll be calling in soon. Let me find another song for y'all.
I just want to ask a question. Who really cares? Save a world in despair. Who really cares? Save the world.
Save the world.
That's destiny. Suffer tomorrow.
Really suffer tomorrow.
Oh, what a shame.
What a shame.
Such a bad way to live.
Such a bad way to live.
We can't stop living. Live life for the children.
Okay, I just got off the phone with the judge, and he will be with us momentarily. So while we're waiting for him, we'll be in a few moments. I just got off the phone with him. So, let me find something else that we can play. I figured everything would freeze up right now, huh? Okay, well, as you know, Judge Joe Brown is a syndicated judge. To have him back with us, it's been a while, and Saturday he scheduling ran over, so he wasn't able to be with us. So we're certainly looking forward to him today. Everything's frozen. I'm sorry, y'all. Forgive me, because everything is frozen and I can't do anything. So what I can say now while we're waiting is Dry Bones has a show on Sunday at 10 a.m. And then, of course, we have the drum call at 3 o'clock Eastern time, no matter where you are in the world. The drum call is at 3 o'clock Eastern time, and it is growing where it's gone over several countries and everything, so that's a good thing. And maybe if I shut this down and bring it back up. Let's try it. I'm sorry, y'all. My computer is frozen. I don't know what's going on here. Maybe we can get this back on the road, where everything will run smoothly. And I truly apologize for this. And I hope y'all have your questions and everything ready. If you have anything that you wish to ask the judge, that you have your questions ready, so that we can be raring to go. Good.
Will be my claim to fame. A girl with no name. That way I won't have to feel the pain. Indispensable. Just a plain old human being. Today don't mean a thing. In a world that's so mean. A world that seems not for me. I won't have to explain a thing, if you know what I mean. I won't even have to be here on the scene. It's so ridiculous, but the strife and the bliss go right on through me to have missed all the things that hurt. Just don't seem to be as free as they claim freedom to be. Things are going fast. To have found it all in the past. To have to take what you can get. Sure can make a heart of the best. Inconspicuous. May have a little fame, fortune, and wealth. It's so ridiculous, but the life and the bliss will go right on through me to have missed. All the world seems not for me, so privately I'll be invisible. That way I won't have to explain a thing, if you know what I mean. don't even have to be here on the scene. So ridiculous, but the sun and the bliss go right on through. Right on through into heaven. All the things that hurt you so, no one would ever know. No, 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 they'd right. Never know.
Okay, well, we're still waiting for the judge, and I did talk to him, so he is going to be with us momentarily. So in the meantime, okay, we're also having technical difficulties, and I don't understand why. So if you have a question or a comment, if I'm able to, I will bring you in and we can talk about whatever you'd like to talk about until the judge is here with us. I can get you in. I truly apologize for this, y'all. Okay, everyone, without any further ado, we have back our most beloved judge, Judge Joe Brown. Judge Joe, you with me?
I'm with you. Good morning or good afternoon, depending upon where you are. All right.
Yes, how are you today?
I'll manage. I think we've been having some communications difficulties here. It's kind of wild, but unfortunately it is what it is. So
yes.
Where you want to go this morning or this afternoon or today?
Well, first, now you said you were campaigning, so are you running for office?
Yes, I am. It's Judge Joe Brown for mayor of Memphis, Tennessee in 2023. Send Brown downtown if you want to take your town back.
All right.
All right. Take your town back and send Brown downtown, JJB23. And we are running for an election that will be in October 2023. That's a year away.
Mm-hmm.
There will probably be a runoff in November because there are a whole lot of colored folk that want to get in the race. Some of them even freely acknowledge they're getting paid to do that so they can slant things to overcome the electoral numbers, which are here. The demographic is that only 19.1% of the registered voters are white. Now, what is classically done in this town is to set white folk at opposition to black folk and vice versa, while a select group go in and spend a whole lot of money. So produces what has turned out to be the most violent city in America in terms of the murder rate and the violent crime rate, which puts us at number one right now, unfortunately.
Oh, wow.
It's got an interesting situation in Memphis where one part of it has the fourth or third highest per capita income in the United States, and the other part of the city has one of the lowest in the United States. The streets have gone to hell. The utilities have gone to hell. The energy costs are off the chart. The employment is bad because most of the money is sunk into some stuff for a select few. The city council just voted to spend $242 million on helping a major hotel chain expand their facilities downtown. That's going to do nothing to help anybody but maybe 100 people. The city council voted to sell 25 acres of downtown property they'd come into downtown for a scant $600,000 and to sink another $210 million into the development of what's going to be just 28 luxury residences for a select group of people and some shops that they will enjoy patronizing that will be restricted. You see where that goes? Meanwhile, they have a problem with police, jobs, education, and everything else. Every car in the city is damaged from the potholes, flat tires, burst tires, broken wheels, suspensions, damaged bodywork, you name it. And they can't seem to get anything together to deal with that. We've got a lot of opportunity in this place, and it's been neglected. We have a clown, a white mayor. His name is Strickland, and he's a general incompetent. And what's going on is we have had an appointed director of police for 40-some years that's answerable to the people. So this clown goes and appoints a chief of police for the first time in 41 years that civil service that can't be removed, and the person has demonstrated a massive degree of incompetence since they've been here in Memphis for 2 or 3 months after getting fired in Atlanta and in North Carolina. Why pick someone for that? Well, that helps go along with the sleaze under the tape, but it is what it is, so things are going to change, and I don't need the money, but I yielded to the call, and I've always found that when it's your opportunity, your time, your duty to rise to the occasion and do what you can do, the only thing that's going to happen to you if you shirk that responsibility is something bad, so I'm going to do it. I know how to do it. I did it, and I know the violent crime rate can be reduced. There are some specific and time-tested methods that work. I know over a 10-year period when I was on the criminal bench in Memphis, they did a study, and statewide there was an 80% recidivism rate. That means felons who were convicted and got out of jail, 80% of them would be back. But in my courtroom, it was only 18% because I was doing something different, and I can expand that and work on it. I want to make this police department, instead of being responsive to civilian oversight, I want civilian control and direction of the police department. Like with the Pentagon, you have the commander-in-chief is a civilian. He's the president. You've got the secretary of defense, who's a civilian. You have the secretary of the Army, Navy, Air Force, etc., who's a civilian, and secretaries of various and sundry aspects of defense. We need that for the police. We need a civilian director or a sub-director for homicide, uniform patrol, sex crimes, traffic, property crimes, burglary, you name it. We need that kind of control. We need community-based access to the dispatcher from block captains. We've got abandoned skating rinks. We need to get the police in there to operate sub-precincts so they become safety zones so youth can congregate and have something to do and also get character put in their heads, you know, because it's all about character.
Yeah.
And that's the important thing. Like, I've taken martial arts for 55 years, and if you haven't taken a comparable amount, or let's say, or type of martial arts, I can kill you with no weapons, but you can't register me when I walk into a room, but I don't kill everybody in the room or anybody in the room. If anything, I'd protect people in the room because I have good character.
Yeah.
So we have this thing nowadays about supplementing, you know, this thing of we got to get rid of all the guns, but then if you defund the police, get rid of the guns, do you really expect the crooks to obey the law, since that's the problem anyway? And the bottom line is you don't disarm the warrior because the fool slave cuts himself on a sharp spear, but somebody else. So we have to do something about taking control of our communities. We've got to start putting manhood back into the head of these boys so that they have duty, honor, obligation, responsibility, accountability, sense of purpose, morality, and ethics to guide them. We must make them men of public peace, dignity, and order who can become brave and courageous when necessary. And the way to do that is to input masculinity into boys' heads so when he is an adult male, he becomes a man because he does what masculinity dictates and he feels intense shame. And he feels intense guilt if he deviates from that. But nowadays, oh, my God, we can't make people feel guilty. That's so bad. Or, oh, we can't shame anyone. So what you see posed as solutions are actually the causes of the problems.
Yeah.
And we've got to do something about turning that around, and you need somebody who can get down in the community. And I've always said that one true test of who should not be in an office is if that person can't walk through all parts of a district he or she represents without a police escort, without getting put in danger of a behind whipping, they don't need to represent that area.
Yeah, that's true.
So we have too many, and we have folk that are hustles and hustlers, and they pimp the people. And that's what we're looking at right now. We've got elected officials who don't really represent the people who are electing them. They represent somebody else. And that's not a good thing.
No, it's not. And this is
a
problem that's not only in Tennessee, but it's all over. It's all over the country.
Well, yeah, you've had 50 years worth of emasculating the country and glorifying dysfunction.
Yeah.
Here's one thing that started this off. See, in the late 60s, the movie industry was in big trouble. There
mm-hmm.
was this thing called color television that was wiping out that industry.
Yeah.
And every Thursday and Sunday at every theater in America, practically, you had two new movies, several new cartoons, and some sub-features that would appear at the theater, and people could walk in for 50 cents at any time, walk in the middle of the movie, sit through the rest of the movie, the rest of the features, and the second movie, and then sit through what they missed, and then leave or keep on sitting there if they were totally bored. So they felt that maybe they can cut down on expenses if they did two things. One thing, which was instead of replacing the movies every Thursday and Sunday, just let the movie stay there as long as people came. And instead of doing two movies, which made a studio have to put out 100, 150 a year, they would only do one movie. And then to tap a great money source, they said, black people want to see themselves. What do? We give them movies that will draw black people to the box office, and their cash flow will save the movie industry, which it did. But here was the rub on it. Do we go in and do what they used to do, where you had black actors playing businessmen, doctors, lawyers, soldiers, detectives, people that upheld the community, who were heads of families and stuff like that? No, let's go get the most cash we can by appealing to the lowest common denominator. There are many black people out there that cannot possibly imagine that they'd ever be one of these over here, but let's make heroes out of pimps, hoes, drug dealers, murderers, thieves, burglars, robbers, drug dealers, and we can get all of these folk coming in. So they started with, I think, the first one in that genre that really was bad was Black Caesar, starring the football player Fred the Hammer Williams. And he played a drug kingpin who was a murderer, and he winds up riding off into the sunrise in a limo smoking a big cigar, the hero. And then 19 months later, you had Superfly that glorified the cocaine industry. And that quickly became what people looked at. And then you had Pam Grier. She was looking good. What was it, Foxy Brown? But if you saw the uncut versions that were in some theaters at the time, she got knocked down 10, 12 times every movie, and her tits popped out of a top or a beaver flashed below, and it was just gratuitous nudity that you were getting a chance to see. The acting was stilted. The plots were lousy. And at first, the plot was always somebody's brother or sister died due to the drug trade, so somebody was going to fight the dope dealer, but then they became the dope dealer as these things morphed on, and it just got to be ridiculous. And then you got TV jumping in there, and you got no restrictions on obscenity anymore. And you get stuff like P-Valley that have gotten to be the height of ridiculousness. So Empire, you know, you got a gangster and a villain as the hero and a bunch of gay folk running around like that's supposed to be normal. The same thing with P-Valley. It has switched over from being a salacious thing about strippers into a rainbow progression. It's not what you want, and it's not the imagery that you want children or young people or young adults to look at. But that's what you find all of the kids in high school and junior high talking about P-Valley and such stuff.
Yeah.
So where are we going with this? Okay, you get this other thing, too. Let's take Sports Illustrated and its swimsuit edition. Half the women in the swimsuit edition now are drastically overweight. They're morbidly obese. So people are saying, well, my God, they have a right to be proud, but let's be equal about this. Sports Illustrated depicts what kind of young men. They're all super fit athletes. They're bicycle racers. They're football players, track stars, basketball players. In other words, they're very fit athletes. Well, it seems that if you're applying the same standard, you would have the ladies who are depicted in there matching the same kind of fitness standards, not somebody that's 100 pounds overweight, which I understand there are people that way now, and they're not lesser human beings, but it's not something that you should hold up as a model for somebody because they're not likely to live to be 40 years old. It's one thing if somebody is built like that and they're in their late 50s, it's another when they're 17 years old. So, I mean, honestly, that's not my type. I understand some people's mothers were big, so men tend to be attracted body style to those that represented their mothers or sometimes the exact opposites of their mamas if it comes to that. Yeah. But, I mean, I walk in a club now, and most of the women in there look like something that when I was in my 20s, I might have seen once every 2 years. And everybody goes, oh, wow, too bad. Wow, that's a shame.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is what it is. And I think of something that Julius Caesar is purported to have said 2,040 years ago, when they made him dictator for life, and his friend Mark Anthony said, Caesar, what do you think the Roman mob will think of you being dictator for life? The Roman mob is what, well, the mob is what they call the common ordinary person. He said, give them bread and circuses and they won't care. In other words, feed them and entertain them and they won't care. So we're getting a lot of entertainments. You can go on your cable, and it's got channel 1863 or 3248 on
yeah.
there. Lots of entertainments.
Yeah.
You can get it on your cell phone, the pad, or, you know, your tablet.
Sound of Music.
And
electronics.
Yeah, and that's the entertainment, and we are certainly well fed because look how big we've gotten.
Yes. Yes, that is so,
I
so
mean,
true.
And we used to have a thing back in the 60s, quote, are you ready for the revolution, unquote. Are you physically and mentally fit and prepared to do what you got to do to be free? And that's the way we talk. That's the way we think, thought. That's the way, I guess you'd call it the then current equivalent of social media, put it out. Are you ready for the revolution? Physically
yeah.
and mentally fit and prepared to do what you need to do to be free. Nowadays, everybody's so caught off on the enemy and what the enemy has done and how the enemy is supposed to make it all right for us that we've gotten away from get the hell out my way, I'll do it my damn self, to sitting around with a bad form of ennui waiting on somebody to do it for us.
Yes.
See, that is something that came out of the 60s that was bad. It was the Johnson administration that came up with this thing of babies for cash. In other words, the more babies you had, the bigger your check from the government. Federally dependent children.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it got people in the habit of having a bunch of babies. Now,
yeah.
it wiped that out. They wiped it out state by state after it had been in effect for 12, 15, 16 years. But what happens is you had produced a situation that I had in my courtroom. Well, an anecdote. I had a family in my courtroom. Let's start 1994. It was
mm-hmm.
a 57-year-old woman. Her second oldest daughter she had when she was 14 was in my courtroom on the same charges. That woman was 43 years old. The 43-year-old had a daughter in front of me, a son in front of me, and another daughter in front of me. The oldest daughter she had in front of me was born when she was 1 week shy of her 10th birthday. She was still only nine. So I had the 43-year-old's 34-year-old daughter in front of me, born when she was nine. I had her 32-year-old son in front of me, born when she was 11, and her 31-year-old daughter in front of me, born when she was 12. Well, the 34-year-old daughter of the 43-year-old granddaughter of the 57-year-old, the 34-year-old woman had a 21-year-old daughter in front of me, on the same sort of felony drug and theft offenses. Okay, the 21-year-old who was the daughter of the 34-year-old, the granddaughter of the 43-year-old, and the great-granddaughter of the 57-year-old, that 21-year-old, when I sentenced her, had an 11-year-old daughter who was pregnant with her second child. So was a daughter.
Yeah.
Who had a mother who was 11, who was the granddaughter of a 21-year-old, great-granddaughter of a 34-year-old, great-great-granddaughter of a 43-year-old, and great-great-great-granddaughter of a 57-year-old, and they're all alive. Well, within 14, 15 months, the 57-year-old, now 59, messed up and on a violation of probation was back in front of me, as was the 21-year-old, who is now 23. Well, when I checked, the 23-year-old's 11-year-old was now 13 with three children.
Oh,
and the 59-year-old, I remember 1 week she came back and she had 242 lineal descendants. 2 weeks later, she had 358. By the time I retired, she had jumped up to having 3,400-plus lineal descendants, and she was just 63 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
So what's going on, one of those descendants was one of 120-plus members of her extended family in my courtroom. That young man, who was 28 going on 29, had 64 outside children. One of his cousins, who was 27, had 46, 47 children. And another one had 45, 46 children. And you see, none of them had ever received a dime in child support from these fathers. In fact, the only two members of this 3,400 plus we could find that had ever worked or graduated from high school were essentially two young women who had been kidnapped by their fathers when their mothers were doing penitentiary time. And interestingly enough, the fathers brought them to Chicago, which at the time, back in the late 90s, had one of the best school systems in America. And
oh,
you
okay.
can see how that has changed because it's gone downhill.
Yeah.
So this kind of thing is correctable. And I noted that one of the things I did when I was the judge is I would have counseling sessions. Everybody I released on bond, put on probation, or suspended the remainder of their sentence after they'd been doing time,
mm-hmm.
well, they had to come to my counseling sessions. And I was also conducting some counseling sessions that the school system doesn't want me to conduct anymore. But 25 years ago when I was doing them, I would have mothers in there who were single and who had at least one son between 13 and 17 in the city school system. And I had multiple counseling groups that I was dealing with, and invariably the first session would start off degenerating into, "Judge, I don't understand. What you need a man for to help you raise children? I hear you, girlfriend. They ain't worth nothing. They ain't nothing but hens and dogs. They ain't good for but one thing, honey. I hear you, friend, girl, blah, 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 blah." So I'd let them go on.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd say, "Okay, stop." I said, "Now, you're in here because you're worried about your sons not growing up to be proper men. Is that right?" "Well, yeah, that's what we supposed to be in here for." I said, "Well, do you want them to be men?" "Well, yeah, I don't want to be no sissy or nothing or get killed, you know." I said, "Well, let me ask you a question. How the hell are you going to raise your sons to be men if you don't know what they're supposed to be good for when they get grown?"
Yeah. But at 9 or 10 years old, how in the world are these women even, well, they're not women. They're still children themselves.
Exactly.
How in the world can they parent a child when they still need to be parented themselves?
Yeah. Now, 45 years ago, I ran the public defender's office for this city, all right? And
mm-hmm.
I remember my white employees didn't exactly like going out in the hood to interview black clients and witnesses, all right?
Yes.
So I'd go do it. I was in, came to Memphis from Los Angeles. Didn't have this accent then, but that's a different story. But anyway, I'd get in there and I'd walk in the kitchen in the projects, and there would be 13 through 19-year-old young females in there. I wouldn't qualify them as women because they didn't know how to act like one.
Yeah.
And there would be 9, 10, 11 very dirty, very stinky, bad-smelling children running around with snot caked to their faces, dried food all over their clothes. They hadn't had their behinds washed in days. It smelled a mess, and they were sitting in the kitchen with a 16-ounce of Schlitz malt liquor, Colt 45.
Ooh.
Or Country Club or Old English 800 and a cigarette or a joint and the other. I'd make them put out the joint. I said, "No, I got to, you know, be subject to drug screens," which they
right.
were dead into then. "No, I don't want any contact." And they'd be selling, little, he ain't get me my cigarettes, little, no good, picking any blah, 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 blah.
Oh,
he ain't nothing but no dog like your dad. Get me a beer out the box, fool. And I said, why are you talking to your children like that? But he ain't worth nothing. He's like they no good daddy. I said, so you got them because you got a check? Well, yeah, that's the only thing they good for, to get my check. I said, well, you spend it on them now. They stay with they, you know, I just keep around hearing, you know, what they grandmammas be sending over. So.
Well, they were bold to even speak like that around you. For you
well,
to be
yeah.
a judge for them to,
no,
to be
I wasn't
open.
A judge. No, I wasn't a judge. This
oh,
was
okay.
back in the mid-1970s, 45 years ago, when I was the chief public defender. And I'm going out to make sure that the defendants and their witnesses are interviewed because my white employees are scared to go out into the hood.
Yeah.
So this is a long time ago.
Yeah.
Now, some years before that, when I had first come to Memphis, I had been with Legal Services. And the number one case we had was getting the check cut back on because the check got cut off because one of the seven or eight daddies, five daddies, was trying to have some impact on the children, and mm-hmm. the social worker cut the check off because there was a man handy.
Yeah.
So that was not cool at all. Now, when I get back to this, here's the significance. Maybe the oldest kid in there, it would be in the summer, would be 7, 8, 9 years old, all right?
Yeah.
That's 1976, let's see.
Mm-hmm.
1986, he's no longer 8 years old, he's 18.
Yeah.
1996, he's 28. 2006, he's 38. 2016, he's 48. You see where this goes? So
yes.
He is... thing has been he's having babies with other women so they can get the check too because they don't want any father or any husband around. They just want the check or they don't want to be bothered or they don't screw wisely. And by now that's 1, 2, 3, 4, same situation in my courtroom, 5 generations. And from 5 generations back, that great-great-great-great-great-grandmama was calling all of her children the N-word, dogs and bees and everything else, and the H thing, and no good and worthless and useless. And then they passed it on for 4 and 5 generations. So, hey, dog, what's happening, man? Oh, man, you know, I get my bitches in my holes, man, you see.
Yeah.
Or, hey, that's my hen, I won't say that word. That's my hen, man. You know, a hen got to be what a hen got to be. Why you use that word? Well, man, we trying to diffuse it. Now, we see when you use the word, you don't diffuse it. You can't add love to it because your subconscious knows what it means. And every time you use that word to one of your homeboys, one of your dogs, you know, somebody you roll with, or to yourself, you're actually chipping off some of your own self-esteem through what your subconscious is doing to you. But you see, they got that from not being manly, not a man thing in the streets. That was their dysfunctional little 17-year-old great-great-great-great-grandmammy back in 1976, sitting up there in the kitchen with all of these little snot-nosed kids running around that haven't been bathed, and calling them the N-word, get her cigarettes, get her beer out the refrigerator.
Yeah, that's a terrible thing.
We have to undo that.
Yes, we do. That we most definitely do. But now,
but
so
now
go ahead.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to try to go another way, but no, please continue.
No, I'll back off, you know.
No. Hey. I mean, because that's a much-needed conversation that we definitely need to have. But
now,
what
we're
going to
turn
curious,
it politically.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. What you get now is let's go to Congress, House and Senate. By the way, Congress is not just the House of Representatives. Article 1 of the Constitution says the Congress of the United States shall have two chambers, the House of Representatives and the Senate.
So when
what we're talking about, let's say the Congressional Black Caucus, is that really a caucus that represents us or something else?
No, it represents something else now.
What does it represent?
What's going on and who's ever running the White House?
No, it doesn't what does the White House represent?
Well, it's supposed to represent the people, but it doesn't.
No, what is it representing? Oh, okay, high finance.
Yes, the bankers.
What else does it represent?
The military.
No, it doesn't even represent the military. The military can't stand them.
No, they can't. I mean, well,
what
global.
Else
now
represent?
It's global.
No, what else? We afraid to say it.
Okay, help me, Judge.
They represent a new secular religion.
Yes.
It's known as LGBTQIA plus occult.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does represent
now,
that.
Let me explain why I call it a religion.
Okay.
We recognize Christianity, Islam, Judaism, Hinduism, Buddhism, Zen, Confucianism, but
yes,
the last three don't have a deity. There's no God for them. It's a system of philosophy. That's the same with LGBTQIA, the cult. It's a system of philosophy. It's not just homosexuality, because as one of those gay folk that I knew from Hollywood being out there, and 90% of them are that way that are in that industry, said, just because somebody's gay doesn't mean they support LGBTQ, which a lot of them think of as a cult. A lot of them think of as representing something that harmed them and condemned them to a lifetime of secret misery because they can't operate as normal people do. They don't like it. And as this person said, for example, Judge, just because you are Christian doesn't mean you were a fan of Reverend Jim Jones or drinking Kool-Aid at a large church picnic. For those
who don't know,
Jim Jones was the cultist and all those people died drinking that cyanide-laced Kool-Aid.
Yes.
All right? So just because And he further went on, just because you are a follower of Islam does not mean you support Al-Qaeda or ISIS.
Right.
He said just because somebody was gay doesn't mean that person supported LGBTQ. But you see, you can't have a nativity scene in a federal building, but you can have a rainbow banner 12 stories deep hanging from the 12th floor of a federal building in D.C. You can have the sidewalk painted in rainbow colors, the street or the crosswalk painted that way, but you can't put up a six-pointed Jewish star under the American flag. You can't put a cross up under the American flag. You can't put a crescent moon and a star under the American flag, but you can put a rainbow flag under it. And if you go to any embassy or consulate in the world now, you'll see that rainbow flag flying under the American flag.
Yeah.
You see what they're doing? They have it officially taught in schools, but you can't teach Christianity, Judaism, Mohammedism. You can't teach Buddhism. You can't teach Zen. You can't teach Hinduism in a school, but you can teach rainbow. The teachers are supplemented by rather sick individuals suffering from mental health issues who want to dress up like women and act like harlots and talk to 2, 3, 4, 5 year olds in public libraries and 5, 6, 7, 8 year olds in public schools when the children are most responsive to women rather than men, they put this rather negative image of women in the child's mind, because instead of looking like a loving mother, they look like a harlot who has become the madam of a brothel. You see what they are doing with this? And when you get the president who says his number one priority will not be black folk, but the LGBTQ agenda. And then for the 2 years he's been in office, that's exactly what he's been pushing, not us. When you say 3 years ago, the Black Caucus is putting on this circus for 2 weeks about whether or not to have a study of reparations. And then 2 weeks later, without debate on a voice vote, they pass on the first reading bill styled the Gay Reparations Act, $58 million for insurance benefits, open-ended with no cap on how much it can ultimately wind up. You see, that's just downright insulting. When you've got young men and women in the military who are getting mutilated and killed, disfigured, crippled for life from IEDs, improvised explosives. Devices over in the Middle East, and they have these mine-resistant vehicles called Rhinos, and Rhinos can hold between 6 and 11 young military personnel, depending upon how they're configured, and protect them. But the cost of two Rhinos that could protect anywhere from 12 to 20-some young American people, you take that for the trannies that they're bringing into the military who are enlisting so they can get their dicks cut off and artificial twats made. And by the time their enlistment is up, most of the time is not spent in service. It's in surgery, physical therapy, and recuperation. And every time you deal with one of them for the primary part of what's happening, you're spending the money you need for two Rhino mine-resistant vehicles, let alone the fact that we have a problem with China, and the only surface vessel we've got that's an extensive operation was first put into service in 1982. So that's a 40-year-old design. We have aircraft. We have 126 operational F-22s. We've got 50 more of them in reserve or in service for training. And the Chinese have a comparable aircraft. They've got 1,500. And India uses the same one. They've got 1,200 of the things. And India gets invited to Red Flag and Top Gun every year. And for the last 9 years, they beat the U.S. Air Force and Navy at their own game using these planes. See, we're way behind the eight ball. The F-35, we spent a lot of money on. We can't even use the damn things because the Chinese have excelled in science, technology, engineering, and math, and they have hacked into the system, and they promised they won't down the aircraft, disable the aircraft, or make the whole damn fleet fall out of the air. So where are we going with this? And the Air Force just issued last year a paper saying, hey, if the Chinese decide to get Taiwan, we can't last more than 24 hours. Just give it up. It's a fait accompli. All they got to do is start it, and we got to bail on it. So how will we? And all of these things are going on while our Black Caucus is in contrivance with pushing everything that this new cult wants, but nothing black people get. You've got $35 billion slashed from the budget of historical black colleges and universities. Yes. You've got horrible, the worst unemployment for black folk in 50 years. You've got, for standard of living, the least relative income level for black folk in 51 years. where is this going? Remember, this is supposed to be when it all happened, and it's getting worse. It's horrible. So who are these people representing?
That's a good question. But how much of this has to go with the Great Reset? You know, that the Green Deal?
Oh, well, Green Deal, yeah. But the point of the Green Deal is you got a worldwide food shortage, and we are essentially subsidizing a bunch of farmers who are now not a bunch of farmers, but mostly a farming corporate industry.
Yes.
To not grow crops so you don't glut the commodity market. Now, we got another problem with that. It's called prison, and it's called schoolhouse to jailhouse. Now, people are saying the criminal justice system is broken. No, it's not. It's working very efficiently, but it's not working to eliminate crime. What it's eliminating is surplus labor. See, America, unlike every other industrialized country, has no government programming to take the now obsolete laborer and convert him to something that's productive. He's being wiped out by industrial technology and computerization. A lot of people are losing jobs, and people who are qualified or were qualified for a fairly high-paying job are now down to a moderate job. The moderate level is down now to a low-paying job. And the low-paying jobs, they've been conditioned with COVID, and the government checks on that to set up a new type of dependency. And you've got signs up all over the place, all over the country, seeking employees for these entry-level positions that they can't fill. So what are you getting out of this whole thing but the generation of dysfunction? So what happens with people and the criminal justice system? Well, labor is a commodity, except instead of wheat, corn, pork, beef, poultry, you have people. So when there is a surplus of would-be laborers to the job market, what do you do with the surplus? Well, what the criminal justice system has become is a mechanism to deal with the surplus labor. This is what's happening with farming and labor. When you have a glut in a commodity, one thing, you store the surplus. Two, you cut back production. Three, you subsidize the would-be producer. So we don't store the surplus when it's a human surplus in a grain silo. We put it in a jail cell.
Yeah, which is not good.
We subsidize the farmer by paying him money to grow something else, which is part of this farm industry situation and problem. Or what do? We give the government check to somebody to subsidize them. The farmer just doesn't plant the crop or plant something else. What we do when we cut back production is all of the hip-hop, the wrong stuff, the fixation on sports, everything else. You get the kids to bang out, drug out, drop out, get knocked up too early, too often, to have no vocational skills, lack of academic preparation to go anywhere, the wrong worldview, wrong ideation, wrong lifestyle. Want to share music from four blocks away, yell across the parking lot about who laid Tamika last night, you know, blah, blah, blah. Copping attitudes, not knowing how to deal with stuff, making their communities chaos by robbing, stealing, killing, poisoning. And then when they get that felony, finally, they essentially become very difficult to employ. And then we have a lot of people that are down a false rabbit hole. We got to get rid of the 13th Amendment. Why? Because it says you can enslave people as a punishment for criminal offense. Yeah, that's what the name of the game is. You make a slave out of any prisoner. You just don't use his labor generally. And when you do, it's in this line of this thing, idle minds mischief make. So you want them occupied so they don't cause too bad a discipline problem. But yeah, you don't want them laboring, because that's why they're in there. The labor market doesn't need them, and it wants to get rid of them. So you do all kinds of stuff to encourage that. And then see, this 50 years of glorification of dysfunction has had some bad things. Rap, for example, okay, you can dance to it. But I'm kind of embarrassed when I go in a club and everybody from 18 and 19, maybe not 19, but say 21 to 71, they're all dancing the same dance to the same music. So I look at that like, wow, there was no way in the devil that my parents, let alone my grandparents, would be doing the same dance as I was when I was a teenager and in my early 20s. This is embarrassing. The music stagnated. Why?
Yes.
Because all over the Western world, there are young males who want something masculine. And they see the hip-hop gangster rap video, and it looks like the men are in charge, and they've got all of the bimbos that are their sexual objects. But that's not really what's going on. If you went to the projects or the public housing in July and you went out back, you would see grandmama, aunts, mama, all their friend girls in the booty shorts, halter tops, you know, 40 ounce in one hand and smoking a joint in the other while they're sitting on the back stoop trying to get laid.
Oh, my.
You see, that's not sexual fantasy unless you're deep into this Oedipus complex crap. That's your mama, grandmama, and your aunts that's depicted up there. But most of the people in the rest of the world don't realize that. So because there's big money into selling the same stuff in Tokyo, Berlin, Moscow, Rome, Firenze, that's Florence, or somewhere, or London, or Liverpool, it doesn't change because it sells, and that's where the money backers put their money, in something that's a proven product. So we have stagnated music, unless maybe you get down to the Caribbean and you get reggae, but then reggae going through soca and some other stuff is beginning to sound a lot like continental mainland U.S. stuff, which is stagnated. I don't like listening to it. Not that I don't like the dance, because I can't tell if it's 2 days old, 2 weeks old, 2 months, 2 years, 2 decades old. It all's beginning to sound the same. It's like Christmas music. You get December, and if you're old enough, you've heard the same music over and over, the same songs, 27 times a day, day in, day out for 2 months, or 40 years, 50 years, 60 years, 70 years, and like, okay, yeah. Please don't play that. Let me just go and go past these places. You know, you don't want to hear it. But it is what it is, and nobody knows any better because nobody's offering any better. Now, we'll give everybody a secret. 55 years ago, you could start a national fad in just 6 weeks.
Yeah.
With the communications they had now, then. Now it doesn't take but 12 days to 2 weeks, 12 to 14
days. If that long, yes.
If that long.
Yeah.
So you see, a fad or a trend can be black power and holding up the power fist, wearing an afro beard dashiki or whatever it may be, and able to deal with if something happened, you can move. And the dashiki ain't bright rainbow colors, is drab green, brown, something that would blend in. Instead of power to the people, you're talking about something else now. You're talking about hip-hop bitches and hoes. You see, you're talking about ready for the revolution. You're talking about running games and pushing grams. You see, different kind of things come to mind when you get what's popular. And you saw how it fell out. I don't know how old you are, but when Superfly came out, people stopped wearing dashikis and afros, and they started pressing their hair, conking their hair again. And, you know, everybody was deep into platform shoes and bell bottoms and, you know, weird colors and white suits and all this other stuff, which was definitely not ready for the revolution. We got all the young brothers running around sagged and bagged with their pants falling off their behinds. And is that manly? No. First time I saw that was in 1980. It was in July. One of my law partners had died or got murdered.
Mm-hmm.
I got some of his clients. I had a late appeal. I went up to the main penitentiary in Nashville. It was 107 degrees, and it was 100-plus degrees in the attorney conference room where the air conditioning broke down, so I'm sitting in the shade out on the yard with a yellow pad talking to a fiend who I had to do a late appeal for, but he didn't need to be out on the streets, and he knew it. But
yeah.
I'm looking up, and I see somebody sagged and bagged and all of this. I said, what in the hell is that? Because at that time, the inmates couldn't wear belts, but they had carefully tailored jeans and shirts, so they looked trim. He said, oh, Lawyer Brown, man, it's like this, man. We up in here doing long time of life, man. We got everything we need except soft booties, man. So we take them short timers, man, and we make a man pussy, man. It's like, see, we already made dude over there, man, some jewelry off in metal shop, and Jamal got his sending the care package with some mascara, rouge, eyeshadow, lipstick, nail polish, and plastic nails. We gonna girl dude up, so we make him wear his pants down like that. So when the guards ain't around, man, see over there where them trees at, man, and just inside them blocks, man, pull them down, bend them down, and get down. And if they try to run, they fall down to their ankles, man. They trip booty up in the air. And them baggy shirts, man, we don't let them wear no panties on the block, man. Take them pants off, man, and we got them a dress on. We just loosen that booty wide open, man, so we get all we need.
Oh, that's terrible.
See, and then about 1984, I was over at a lady friend's house, and crisscrossed the group was sagged and bagged. You know, I think it was on either BET or MTV. And now got this idea to lower the sag, the cooler the dude. No, you just look like you're getting something up your ass, and you getting turned into man pussy off in the joint. That was 42 years ago in the 1990s, it had morphed into anybody in the penitentiary dressed like that just belonged to somebody instead of everybody knocking it out. So, I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah.
So what do? We don't know that we're doing. Because you walk through some of the areas right now, man, you see this, man. It's like, look, Jamal, man, you don't understand, man. Tell him stop, man. He ain't going to be no man till he do his time, man. Well, it's not that I'm not doing my time, man. You know, that's inevitable, man. Like, you know, I understand you don't, man. You got to do you some time so you understand the 411, man. See, they're talking about being slaves is a rite of passage.
Yeah, but it's not.
No, it's not. When they take your freedom from you, you are a slave. And that is what fundamentally it means to be imprisonment. They reduced you to the status of a slave. And see, that's what's wrong with this whole penal system. It doesn't punish because some people who are healthy humans and understand freedom don't get it. They think, oh, well, Judge, they need to change these conditions of imprisonment so they don't get color television and air conditioning and all of this recreation. No, it's not that. What it is they took your liberty. You ever get to London, go visit the Tower of London. Actually, it's a series of towers. It is the most secure and main penitentiary in England, and it was reserved for important political prisoners, but it's a palace.
Yeah.
So here is a prison that is simultaneously a palace. And that's the same thing with being in jail. It's not the conditions of the confinement. It's the fact that you are confined and your liberty has been taken and you've been reduced to the status of a slave. So here are all these young black males thinking that being in the condition of a slave is a rite of passage. And they're so poorly prepared for life that being in there is an option. They don't have any employable skills, so it's a free meal, a bed, and clothing. They don't have any judgment that they apply to what they do, so somebody's telling them when to go to bed, when to get up, when to go to eat, when to go exercise, when to have rec time, and this is what you can and cannot do, and they're treated like children, like cattle, two-legged cattle.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but when we ideate as youth, we got to go to prison in order to become men. Uh-uh, that's not what it is.
No, it's not. And it shouldn't be. It truly, truly should not be.
But then we have our black elected officials who are supposed to be advancing their cause, our cause, but they advance their own selfish causes. That's not what it's about. But it's what we have allowed. And one of the things that we have is this old parable about America. In America, the people get the representation they deserve. If the representation ain't shit, it's because the people are acting like they're not shit.
Well,
so act like you are worth something and demand leadership and figure out what you're voting for by not spending so much time watching NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, Housewives, T-Valley, and nonsense like that. Pay attention to what's going on.
Yes,
Don't just wait. Yeah, but we let ourselves get put in that because we wait till the last day to find out what's going on. Don't depend upon a handout given you by somebody that's making money off of the political process. We had a guy that was one of the worst judges in criminal court. I mean, he was a real idiot. And when I got elected, I cussed him out damn near every other meeting. He was sick. But he got the black bloc vote. But guess what his background was? He had been the Grand Dragon for the Klan.
Oh, my.
And he had been chairman of the White Citizens Council. And these fool Negroes would give him the black bloc vote because he would pay big money to get on everybody's sample ballot.
Oh, my goodness. And so that's being hurt. You know, you're being hurt by somebody giving you some pennies, giving you some crumbs.
Yeah, and here, take this ballot out. Well, I always vote when I get a ballot from Representative so-and-so. I always vote for Congressman so-and-so. Why? We got a congressman here. He's Jewish. He's white. His district, the 9th District of Tennessee, is 92% black. He hasn't done a damn thing for black folk in 16 years. He got in because Harold Ford Jr., who was the son of Harold Ford Sr., who became the first black congressman for that district back in 1974, resigned. They had 16 people running for the Democratic primary for this position. He was the only white person. He got elected, and because for the 9th district, whoever is Democrat gets in, they've had somebody in there whose landmark piece of legislation is a bill that makes it mandatory for the congressional cafeteria to serve only paper straws.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's what we've gotten out of him, which is zero, zip, nothing.
Oh, my. Judge Doug, what do you think about this, this censorship that they're, you know, everything is being censored now on what you say on the internet, what you post,
We have to set them up so we can get them in court, and you have to do it before too many of these new federal appointees get in who are going to support that poison. See, here's what the deal is. Back in the 19th century, when they started getting gas, they had these utility companies that would provide gas for streetlights and for gas ovens, which were coming online.
Yeah.
And these people were private business, and they said, okay, we want to develop this, so we're not going to sell you gas. We don't like you. But they got taken in and sued, and what wound up happening was you provide something that's a public utility, a utility to the public. You get to take advantage of the zoning regulations, of the police power of the district, of various and sundry laws. You get right-of-ways and easements. So I don't care whether you're a public, a private institution, you are a public utility and you can't do that. Now, Trump did something real smart a few years ago when they sued him, Twitter, and a number of people who posted. He blocked everybody ostensibly because he did not want people to speak negatively about him. But that's what they say. But I think what happened is it was more strategic. They sued him in federal court, and they won. And what the federal court said was because Twitter has become a public forum and because you are president and you say things, the ordinary people have a First Amendment right to engage in First Amendment discussion, full-fledged discussion. Whether you like it or not, you have to allow it. So he wisely, I think, did not appeal that, and that is now the precedent, which is if you operate and you interfere with or influence or impact interstate commerce, which includes by wire, by having an FCC license, because Twitter doesn't work, YouTube doesn't work, Instagram doesn't work, FaceTime doesn't work unless you have a cell phone, a desktop computer, or a tablet, or whatever it may be, or a laptop, and you have to broadcast. So that means you have to be subject to FCC regulation, and that means that you get advantage of using a limited number of frequencies that are available to civilians. That means you must be subject to non-discrimination. So you can't, under the American Constitution, be concerned with somebody having hurt feelings. You can only be concerned with the following. Is it obscene? No, it's not obscene. They can have stuff now that kids can look at where somebody swinging his bare dick and letting little elementary school kids pull on it while he's on the gay pride float. You can have you can't have something that is going to immediately provoke a physical combat between two reasonable, rational people, that's called fighting words, and you can't intentionally cause public disorder by doing something like falsely yelling fire in a crowded theater. Those are the only three things you can't do.
Yeah.
Maybe in wartime, secrets, you know, military things, state of war and all of that, but we're not there. You can't guide what you do because somebody's feelings are hurt. That's okay. See, if you do something to defame somebody, you can't block somebody from exercising First Amendment rights to defame someone. But somebody who is a victim of a defamation may have a civil suit, but here's the caveat. An absolute defense to a defamation action is truth. Also, if someone is a public figure, or because of circumstance has come to the attention of the public because of events, a tragedy, a disaster, a crime, whatever it may be, you have to deal with the 1962 case, New York Times versus Sullivan, where there must be an intentional and malicious intent to fabricate something false. You see,
yeah,
these things about saying gay folk, you know, that's strange or they're queer. But then again, that got knocked out when people discovered that LGBTQ, Q stands for queer and questioning. Mm-hmm. And perhaps too many people on the Black Caucus were questioning. And now what the problem is that while we whoopee, they have this thing nowadays where they don't want that questioning to come out because they're not ready to be brought out of the closet. Well, you know, you got a poisonous thing where we need to set them up so they get to be declared a public utility so we can use the modern soapbox for First Amendment activity. And the First Amendment says the right to assemble and petition for the redress of grievance shall not be abridged. And then it goes on. A free press being necessary to et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You see, we need a restoration of equality and treatment, which we had up until around 1984 with the Reagan administration, that said if you were a news outlet, for example, and you badmouthed one entity, that entity had a right to have an objective reply. So people stayed neutral. Yeah. Now you don't have to do that. And the journalism is degenerated into a replica of tabloid journalism.
Yes.
So we have problems, but we can correct them if we pay attention and stop trying to be trendy and politically correct and become effective, wise, and discerning, become analytical, rational, and reasonable, instead of getting caught up in this mess where emotionalism is a justification. It's not. It may be the driving engine, but we have always sought as humans to control emotionalism so we don't get the negative effects. And toward the end of my career on the bench, young man, the court is interested in learning why you did this. With due respect, I was emotional. And? But ain't that enough? I was emotional. Where in the world did you get the understanding that your being emotional was a justification? Well, I hear it all the time on TV. That ain't okay. No, it's not.
Mm-hmm. And that's the problem that we're having, is that, you know, too much entertainment and how it's affecting people, where they taking the lives of, looking at the lives of entertainers at, they can do and say the things that they do and say, and you know, that they just don't realize that the entertainers can only do but so much as well. And
there
a lot of things that they put out is fictional. It's not, you know, it's not their real lives. They're still acting as a character.
Yeah, and you put Hollywood figures and entertainers as role models. And one thing I can tell you with being out there in Hollywood for 15 years, and I was over 50 when they got me.
Yes.
Here's the thing. You have adults who have spent 5, 10, 15, 25, 35, 40, 45 years doing what?
Entertainment. No,
what is entertainment? It's make-believe for the
right.
most part.
Make-believe,
so
yes.
They spent their whole adult lives into make-believe and fiction. And
yes,
that's what you want to have as a role model. I won't mention the names, but I encountered some of these action heroes. And on screen, yeah, man, we got to really go put a move on him and kick some ass, man, yeah. We got to go do what we got to do, man. And then you run into them there at a studio function. Oh, my God, in his notes, and really, when I got to play this macho creep, oh my God, I just screamed all. What the
hell?
Oh
my goodness!
Damn!
Oh my!
Okay.
Wow.
Okay, let's another thing. Black Panther.
Yeah.
Everybody wanted to go see that movie. And
yeah.
Let's break it down. First off, the guy that came up with it, Stan Lee, when he did the comic book, Black Panther was more closely akin to the villain in the movie, Killmonger. Okay,
mm-hmm.
In the movie, Killmonger's daddy is the brother of one of the Black Panther kings, and his brother kills him because he's trying to radicalize the young males in public housing in California. So he gets killed. Well, his
yeah.
son, who becomes heir to his claim to the throne, goes to MIT and becomes a rocket scientist and graduates at 19 years old, gets a PhD, joins the Navy SEALs, becomes so good at killing, he becomes nicknamed Killmonger, and he starts plotting revolution. In the comic books, the Black Panther was a king who was trying to do what Killmonger was doing in the movie, which is take over Africa and then pacify the world using the technology they had. Well,
yeah.
The Black Panther in the comic book became a tight-wearing vigilante because the Killmonger there was a drug dealer that operated out of Harlem with sex trafficking ring that ran into Africa along with a drug trade. This one, he's just a flunky who's got powers, not because he's born with superpowers, but because the women have been feeding this magic elixir to him that is fortified by the meteorite that landed in Wakanda. So he's more strong than anybody else because of the drug. Now, he's run by his mama, his aunt, and all of the women. There are no men in charge. The only man in the council is that fool with that Ubangi disc in his lip and those orange and green sport coats and slacks. Okay, when there is a challenge for the throne, the women feed the Black Panther they want, the magic formula that gives him super strength and he becomes the king. Well, when Killmonger challenges, they give him not the formula, they give Killmonger nothing, but he still rips the Black Panther's ass even though he's been fortified with the drug. And what do the women do? They commit treason. They break the law of the tribe. They go outside the tribe to recruit some allies. Now, this is Africa. But
yeah.
The allies live in caves above the snow line where it perpetually snows. Are they living on Mount Kilimanjaro? No, because no place there looks like that. So where in Africa do you have these prehistoric cavemen living in a cave? Okay, now we get into this. The penultimate battle of the whole movie has the black women of the tribe trying to kill the black men of the tribe and vice versa, which is absolutely ridiculous. But we flocked in there, and you know what was going on? ABC and Disney were broke. Why? Because in 2011, the Ninth Circuit awarded the plaintiffs that represented this series, So You Want to Be a Millionaire, and they awarded them $580 million. ABC
wow.
and Disney couldn't pay it, and it's up to $1.25 billion, so they were threatened with foreclosure, so they needed cash flow to pay off a portion of the interest, so black people provided it. The Black
yeah.
Panther is the highest-grossing superhero movie of all time, and I'm embarrassed to say, you know what city had the highest box office in the entirety of the United States of America?
Memphis.
It wasn't Memphis. Now, let's get to the woman king. Before anybody goes to see that movie, they need to look up the historical reality. That area was a primary source of slaves during the slave trade, and because Europe was essentially invited in and had a close relationship with the area, they propped them up, which is how they got to be powerful.
Yeah.
So when you're looking at Viola, you need to realize that they've cleaned up what she really stood for. She was running the biggest slave transport operation in the world, bringing the largest number of slaves out of Africa through where she ruled as a queen, not a king, because they did have a king. So when we get all happy with that movie, realizing that they're celebrating somebody that under modern law would be charged with war, with crimes against nature, against humanity, excuse me, put on a wall and shot or hung or imprisoned for life.
Yeah.
But you see, all of the black people are so happy to go there because we want something to chip off the damage, well, the damaged areas of our self-esteem. But you see, Hollywood is running the game on us. That is not a good thing that they're celebrating. There is an African woman that was offered an important part in there who accepted, and then she got called upon to do a documentary behind that, and she says, my God, I didn't realize what the homie had been doing. All of these tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of black folk enslaved out of here. This is an abomination. I feel ashamed. And she withdrew from the movie.
Oh, wow.
So when you look at that, see what Hollywood's done. See, this was a propaganda tactic that I studied 55 years ago at UCLA. And one of the propaganda tactics is cause your target to glorify something that actually represents one of their darkest chapters.
Yeah.
That would be like picking a Nazi and making a movie to glorify the Nazi. That's what effectively, it would be like the Jews making a movie glorifying a famous Nazi.
Yeah, glorifying Hitler.
Yeah, see, that isn't the way it ought to be. And then the other thing, too, is it pushes lesbianism. One of the characters in that movie, one of the young Amazons, falls for a guy from Brazil who has been brought in to deal with the slave trade. He has been there himself, and she's falling for him, but she's supposed to not be interested men, just with other women. See, this is a feminist thing. I was in Paramount, under Paramount, for about 8 or 9 of those 15 years I was out there. It was Viacom. And I'd often in headquarters hear these lesbians plotting how they were going to use black women as a conduit into establishing a normalcy. In other words, black men who were straight didn't count. We were the worst of the worst. So let's attack black males through black women and get black women thinking negatively about the men that ought to be in their lives, because we don't think women should need men. So they would raise their boy children, black boys, to be harmless and less offensive. I heard them have those discussions, and I'd always pop up, I hear you talking BS again, ladies. Why don't you back off of it?
Yeah. That was greatly helpful. Judge, we have a person that they've had their hand up since the beginning waiting for you. So
okay.
I'm gonna bring them in just a moment. Area code 732.
Yes, thank you, Antoinette. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. And yourself?
I'm great. Judge Joe Brown, we have been waiting for you, and it's well worth our wait.
Yes, it
but
is.
Anyway, I have two, maybe three questions, if I don't take too long. If I'm pronouncing it right, you mentioned it in one of your conversations, lineal descendants. Is that like is it actually like it says descendants?
Oh, okay. No. Here's what I mean. If you're on my age range, you probably have grandchildren. All right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Your grandchildren are your lineal descendants. Your children are your lineal descendants. Your great-grandchildren will become your lineal descendants. Your great-great-grandchildren will become your lineal descendants. In other words, you would be the matriarch to a family group that all include you as an ancestor. Or if you're a guy, you would be a patriarch to descendants. You see, lineal descendants means that you are directly descended from somebody. You are a lineal descendant
okay.
of your grandfather and your grandmother. So when
okay.
I said this woman had 3,400 plus lineal descendants, I meant she was their direct ancestor, and she was mama, grandmama, great-grandmama, great-great, great-great-great, et cetera, to 3,400 people.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. And one of the other ones was what do you think about the spaceship that won't go to the moon?
Well,
it won't. Okay.
They'll get there. I actually saw a Saturn V launching years ago from Cape Canaveral / Cape Kennedy, the nighttime shot. That was the most awesome thing I'd ever seen and heard and felt. And I had a lot of science in college and high school. I had a math science major at one point. And that thing could get to the moon. I've talked personally to several of the astronauts who actually walked on the moon, celebrity status and all that stuff. So they can get back. The only problem is we have had a long 50-year hiatus because it was popular in 1972 to 73. Why are we wasting all of this money on space when there are all of these starving people here at home that we need to feed? Well, we fed all of those starving people, and we didn't give them any encouragement to do what they could for self, and we've got a lot of dependent people who are crippled. We got caught up in the biblical parable on the negative side. Remember the one that says you can feed a man a fish or you can teach him to fish so he can feed himself.
Yeah.
We've been way deep into feeding the fish, and we've become used to that, which is not good for anybody. Now, our problem right now in terms of sophistication is that we've learned there are some asteroids that come close. And as a matter of fact, there's a shot that is going down right now where they are going to deliberately impact an asteroid to see if we have the means to deflect it if we do it soon enough from hitting Earth. There was one that came between where our GPS satellites to do that GPS function thing on your cell phone and the planet. A year and a half ago, it was about as big as a Statue of Liberty. And it doesn't seem like much, but you can take a bullet that's a half inch wide and take down a 12,000-pound elephant with it. Now, moving at the velocity that thing was moving, if it had impacted Earth, it could have completely wiped out a place like New York or Chicago or Los Angeles, Detroit, Philadelphia, or London or Paris or something like that, or Beijing or Moscow. So we have to be into the space program for self-protection. We're running out of resources on this planet, and people won't stop screwing, so we won't engage in effective birth control. So what are we going to do? Suffocate and die or move on to another place? Now, had we not had that hiatus starting about 1974 in the space program, we most likely would have people on Mars right now, and in 5, 10, 15, 25, 50 years, you could terraform Mars so people could actually live on it. But we aren't putting our minds to it. Now, a whole lot of stuff, including these cell phones we're using right now, came out of that space program. Necessity is the mother of invention when it comes to human affairs, and the necessities revealed by that space program produce these things. Now, if you ever watch the Science Channel, you can see homeboy Lucy, who came off the streets, went through the Marine Corps, went through MIT and Caltech, and is now senior trajectory physicist for NASA. He's a good brother. I know him personally. He lectures to a lot of young black folk about getting it together, and he can work the streets too because he's not lame. But you see, we have an input in there and a reason to be involved in it because we won't stop screwing, or at least the straight ones of us won't. And then there's another thing too. There's this giant, super giant red star, Betelgeuse or Betelgeuse, depending upon how you pronounce it. It's 500-some light years away, and every time they've seen one of these things do what this thing is doing, it tends to go nova. Problem is, we saw it doing what it was doing some 500 years ago. It may already have gone nova. We got a few years to remain, but if we happen to be lined up with the axis of that thing, everything on the planet is fried. So, I mean, you can go biblical and say time has come, Armageddon and all of this, or you could simply go to Mars and change it around and you got another home. So there are people in two places. But, you know, it is what it is. We have the means to get out there, and the People's Republic of China is going to go there. By the way, talking about science, they have in laboratories, meaning they being the People's Republic of China, the Chinese have proved that you can warp space, at least on small scales, just like you do in Star Trek. They've even beamed matter in small quantities from their laboratories to their satellites and back, like beam me aboard, Scotty, again, Star Trek. And U.S. scientists have verified it, but we don't know how to do it, but they do. So we're getting left behind because you've got 1,300-some million people in China, and they are making people go as far in school as they can go free of charge. Over here, we're trying to make it ruinous for people to go to school. And I won't even say anything about this last pay off your student loan bit. It's nothing but a fraud because we don't even benefit from it much.
Thank
the problem
you so much
is,
for that. Oh, go ahead.
Let me say this point about that student loan payoff. The cutoff is $125,000 per person, $250,000 per family of two. Now, I hate to break the bad news to everybody, but under the U.S. guidelines, you aren't middle class if you make less than $125,000 a year by yourself. You might be lower middle class, but you're not middle class unless it's $125,000. The problem is that everywhere else in the world, if you get the education that is reflected by student loans in America, you're automatically upper middle class within 5 years. We are not. And the main problem is that when you pay these loans off, you're still not making the money you ought to make commensurate with your education. And what you just did is help out the banking institutions who can reduce drastically these staffs that they would have to be employing and the court proceedings they would have to institute in the expense of collection in trying to recoup their loans. And then the Constitution's Bill of Rights says no person can be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. You can't deprive the fictional person known as a corporation of its property interest without due process of law. So if you pay these loans off, what's happening is the government has to pay the banking institutions. So they get their money and we get relief. And in the scheme of things, they make money. We don't. We get excused of the loans, but we don't earn on a middle class basis. So it's a game. But thank you for calling in.
And, well, I have my last question. Can I ask you yet one more?
I guess we got 90 seconds. Hurry up.
Okay. Where I live in a co-op. And so what's happening is, like, everybody has gardens. When I first started my garden, I started with just two hydrangeas. I was working so much, I didn't have time to do a whole bunch. So when I just had my two hydrangeas, they didn't want me to have my hydrangeas, the Crestwood Village and everything. They didn't want me to have just the two hydrangeas, so I kept my hydrangeas. Then I put a little wall up against around it. They had a fit about the wall. I had three mason blocks. They sent me a letter saying I could only have three mason blocks. So I'm saying, well, why did they send me this letter saying I could only have three and that's all I had? So then I think they realized it the next month, which was July, and they said, well, look, you could only have two mason blocks. There's nothing about this in the handbook or anything. So anyway,
well, here, let me give you a suggestion. I don't want to give you legal advice, but there's this thing called detrimental reliance. If you rely on somebody to your detriment, they're stuck with their representation. Get yourself a lawyer. But they said you could have three. You relied on that. So that's kind of the agreement they forged with you, and you accepted it. There was an offer and an acceptance. That's a contract. Now, I'm not giving you particular advice, but that is what generally the law says. That's a clue. You might go get somebody to help you.
Mm-hmm.
And you might put that in a letter to them.
Is detrimental, is the word you said detrimental?
Detrimental reliance. You might say, dear sirs, I relied to my detriment on your representation last month in the following letter. Please see the enclosed copy that I could have three. You made me an offer. I accepted it. That is a binding agreement between us now.
Okay. And then the other thing is I like my 13-point star, so I put that out in front of the house. I put it in the different places. So they tore my store down with a tree, so I went and put it back up. So I only make it out of hangers and copper and stuff like that. So I put it back up. After I put it back up, the president came, knocked on my door. He said, you can't have that store. So I said, why? So he said, because he doesn't like it, and none of the other neighbors like my star. So I got up the next morning and went down. Go ahead.
Look up your zoning codes. They should be on file at your municipal center or city hall or town hall. See what they say.
Okay. Zoning codes. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I guess you answered all those for me. And thank you so much. This was a very, very interesting call. All of your knowledge and wisdom. But thank you so much. You have a highly exalted.
All right, now, caveat. Okay. That's not legal advice, but that is a suggestion as to recourse that you might seek legal advice to pursue. Or at least if you're writing something to somebody, it's a negotiating point, perhaps.
Okay.
But
you know what else?
But do look at your zoning codes and see what they permit. All right?
What they did, when I went to the meeting that next day, they told me, they never said I couldn't have my store. Then 3 years later, they said I could have my store because they said it was religious purposes. But when they came and took a lot of my property, they took my store too. Then the police came. The police said they were still and he had to bring it back. So I had started in federal court with this, and I had dismissed
federal
it without.
Federal court?
Uh-huh.
Federal court? That sounds more like something that would be, frankly, maybe federal. I'm not giving you legal advice, but it does sound like something that would be more local.
Mm-hmm.
What you might want to do is pursue an injunction against somebody, or you might want declaratory judgment relief, or you might want to deal with a cease and desist. See, that's why you need to get counsel, particularly. Well, see, if you're running a store even for religious purposes, I would strongly suggest that you get a lawyer that you can consult with so that you don't run afoul of, say, personal or business liability or slip and fall, let's say, or what you need to do to set up so you get protected so you don't get ruined if there's some mischance.
Got this information, and I'm gonna definitely go with this. And oh, you know what else too, Judge Joe Brown? Have you heard, I know you heard of the UCC. Some people are saying I should go that way.
You can. You can go all of these ways.
Oh. Okay. But I thank you so much again.
Just because you have one remedy doesn't mean you might not have more than one.
Mm-hmm. Wow. But I thank you again so much.
Yes, thank you. Judge, before you go, I have to ask you this one question. What are your thoughts on this war with, and how is this fitting in with us?
Look, let me say something.
Okay.
At the beginning of World War II, Ukraine staunchly supported Adolf Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
Ukraine supplied a huge number of volunteers for the German armies as foreign volunteers. The Nazis never had to pay. The Nazis who were in World War II because they were part of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, a.k.a. the USSR, a.k.a. the Soviet Union.
Yes.
Nikita Khrushchev, who was the premier of the Soviet Union during the Cuban Missile Crisis that JFK had a set to with, and was hero of the Soviet Union for being the chief commissar at the Stalingrad siege, was born and raised in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
You see, Ukraine was once a big part of the Soviet Union. When the Soviet Union broke up, it got its independence. That's like the South becoming independent. And by the way, some of the worst racism in Europe exists in Ukraine.
Yes.
And one of the reasons that we have such a mess is because a lot of people who are third generation African immigrants to Ukraine are there because their ancestors moved to the most southern portion of the Soviet Union because, frankly, they didn't want to stay in Moscow where it got down to 15 below zero on a winter basis for a number of months out of the year.
Yeah.
So they aren't treated very well because Ukraine has a long history of racism and ethnic strife.
Yes.
So when we listen to Ukraine, there is another thing going too. The Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, says the government shall, quote, enforce the law of nations, unquote. Article 6 says treaties ratified by the Senate shall become part of the supreme law of the land along with the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And Article 2, Section 4 says President and Vice President may be impeached and, if convicted, removed from office. The 12th Amendment infers that any person who has been impeached and convicted can no longer hold any office. And the second impeachment proceeding that was unsuccessful against Trump established a precedent that you can be impeached for proceedings or actions done when you held an office you no longer held. Now, you notice that the president has not gone to Ukraine. He set Vice President Kamala Harris Imhoff.
Yes.
Mrs. Imhoff. Why? Mm-hmm. Because 4 days before the November 2020 election, Ukraine's Supreme Court ordered the redactions on a long, long indictment removed and named in multiple counts of the indictment are not only Hunter Biden, but guess who? Joe Biden, President of the United States of America.
Yes.
And remember the one about Article 6 and the treaties that are ratified? We have ratified treaties with Ukraine that say we will help each other in apprehending, detaining, and extraditing criminal elements. So technically, we are bound by a treaty to take Joe Biden into custody and extradite him to Ukraine for criminal proceedings. Now, what does Article 2, Section 4, dealing with impeachment and removal upon conviction, deal with? There are three things. Treason.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in order, it says bribery. Next, treason. And number three is crimes in office, either misdemeanors or felonies. Now, I'll give you an example of ignorance. When they went after Trump round one, they charged him with obstructing Congress and abusing his authority. Well, that's not bribery. It's not treason. And by the way, treason is the only crime defined in the Constitution. It set forth the number of witnesses and what they have to testify to and what the evidence has to be. So it's not treason. Now, obstructing Congress? Well, there's no such crime, so what is it? But let's take Congress. Article 1 of the Constitution says Congress shall consist of two chambers, the House and the Senate. So these people fell into the trap of media referring to them as congressmen because that's a carryover from the 19th century when the only congressmen you could vote for were in the House to Senate. You couldn't vote for senators then. So only thing that had to happen on that was when it got to the Senate, just this quick poll, anybody in here feel you got obstructed even if it was a crime? Nope. So that one is out of there. Plus it's not a crime, so it was dead on arrival anyway. The other one was abusing his authority. What United States Code annotated law did that violate? Answer, none. So in other words, you spent all of that time, all of that drama on sending over something that was dead on arrival for trial in the Senate because it didn't state either bribery, it didn't accuse of bribery, it didn't accuse of treason, nor did it accuse of crime. So what did you send over? You did the same thing the second time, that is the House, but again, they didn't state a crime, they didn't state treason, they didn't state bribery. But what they did do is establish the precedent that even though Trump wasn't president any longer, you could go after him. So Biden's no longer vice president, but he's got bribery, extortion, subornation, or in other words, solicitation of treason, perjury. All of those are cognizable criminal offenses under American law. So here we go. While we whoopee, we got a treaty. Also, we have one with the signatories to Interpol, and Ukraine is a signatory to Interpol, so we've got that additional treaty obligation to help with that. So are we over in Ukraine because there is a really righteous cause, or are we over there to help keep somebody from getting jacked around under American law and sent there.
Well, sounds like the latter.
Yeah, but you can't do it while he's president because they would simply allege, we would allege diplomatic immunity even if they wanted to seize him if he went over there. And the problem is we still have strategic bombers and nuclear missile submarines, M1 tanks, and a few other things we could bring to bear, let alone nukes and ICBMs. So, you know, when you have the power to back up your word, you can kind of get what you want. So right now the United States is saying, oh, we love this guy, or some of them do. And he's in the White House, so we know we've got these problems. And then there's this January 21st appearance on C-SPAN that I heard four or five times where he said on a panel, that's Biden, hey, look, I guess I'm guilty of bribery. I told them that I'd see to it that their $14 billion American loan guarantee was wiped out if they didn't back this prosecutor off of my son.
Oh, my. And I do remember hearing that.
Yeah, that's bribery. That's extortion, which comes under bribery. That's also a felony. And that was committed while he was in office, so while we whoop-de-doo. Not him saying it, but him doing it and talking about it. And one of the other things, and it's interesting, it's also somewhat treasonous. And the Constitution, amongst other things, says that the defendant has to admit the treason. And he did. He said it. Now.
Yeah, and it's recorded.
Yes, indeed. So I said when they were doing it, be careful what you ask for. You might get it.
Yeah.
And you don't want it. And, well, they know what they're doing. I said, no, they don't. Well, see there. I said, but look, I've been doing this for a half century. I graduated from the top of my law school at UCLA. I'm no lightweight. In the state of Tennessee, for one 10-year period, they ranked all of the judges, trial judges, several hundred of us in Tennessee, on how many times had the judge been reversal. The second lowest number of reversals in Tennessee for that 10-year period was 42. I only had four partial reversals. So I took the record as the judge in the whole state over a decade with the lowest number of appellate reversals. So I'm no fool, so I just say this junior flip is not practice anything. And by the way, I'm embarrassed about that woman Jackson, Brown Jackson, being the new Supreme Court member, because there are some black women that were much more qualified, I think more intelligent, and have done a lot more for our people than that
lady.
I'm embarrassed.
Yeah.
Let's take Second Circuit where she is. Judge Rogerie Clifton, an outstanding woman. Hell, the daughter of the woman who was a California lawyer that handled my divorce, she's on the Second Circuit Court of Appeals. She's a brilliant black woman. They could have gotten her. Judge Bernice Donnell, I mentored her. She's on the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, or was until she retired, but she can be brought back because she's relatively young. She's a damn good sister. And she didn't deal with the kind of frou-frou nonsense this Jackson, this Brown Jackson woman did. She dealt with people law. She even did a stint as a public defender and as a defense lawyer. She could have had that nomination, and I bet you damn sure and well if they'd asked her what a woman was, she would have told.
She would know, yes. Yes.
We just got somebody that this administration nominated and got approved for the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals to replace excellent Bernice Donnell. I'd never heard of this black lawyer. He's young. He isn't even 40. Too young, I think, for the position. And the other thing is, He's into heavyweight corporate law. He's never handled a criminal trial, a civil trial. He's never dealt with a client who is an actual human sitting across the table from him. So what favors did these people, somebody up there who has demonstrated a lack of interest in what happened to his people? And I say that because having been in this profession for 50-plus years, I say you are full of it if you are a black person and you have not turned your knowledge and acumen in the law to the benefit of your people.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. Putting office where you're representing, you know, everyone, but, you know, particularly us. You know, we need representation because the laws and everything are against us. But, Judge Joe, I have a person that you have to talk to that is here with us. Are you ready for him?
Yes.
Okay. Area code 313, Ms. Kim.
It sure took y'all a long time to get to me. God bless.
I'm sorry, Ms. Kim.
No, I'm just teasing, baby. Judge, you're on the roll. God bless you. And you need to do this more often. You really do. I mean, I got so many questions.
I do this 10, 12, 15 times a week, but they try to suppress it because they don't want the message out there. And there's some other people that do it fine.
Absolutely.
We do it.
Listening to what you were just talking about, they put people in there that they control, tokens, you know, and we don't say anything about it because they ask us. I would like to go back a little bit. I had FCC license for the radio. And it's not the same FCC. What do they do now?
What do they do now? Go ahead. Keep on.
I'm asking, when I was on the radio, the FCC was supposed to be checking everybody and checking what's coming across the airways. What do they do now?
They have been marginalized, and the other thing is that somebody needs to question their congressman, House of Representatives aspirant, or U.S. senatorial aspirants, and what are you going to do about it? Ain't got an issue.
Say that again.
Contact your representative in the House and your U.S. senator and say, what are you going to do about this? We need fundamental fairness in broadcasting, including on social media. We can't have everybody suppressed for the benefit of the few. Never have so few controlled so many and lived off of what so many have provided as resources. Now, we got a very few that are using everything out there for their own slanted purposes that are totally against the rest of us. And let me just be clear about it. I'm not getting on people for being homosexual. I'm getting on people who are anti-family, who want to destroy manhood, womanhood, and childhood.
Well, I mean, where are the people that are talking against them talking to the children and kids? I mean, I don't understand.
We need to complain. We need to have a mass letter writing, mass email campaign to FCC. We need to have mass communications with our representatives and senators saying, what are you going to do about this? We are aggrieved. We do not like this kind of poison being allowed over the airways. And see, write them letters. See, what is going on is this. We're being told that pediatricians and child psychologists saying what they're trying to do is good. The actual fact is 95% of the pediatricians and child psychologists and general psychologists say this is poison. This is not what we think. This is a propaganda lie to say this is mainstream. It's not. The truth of the matter is the percentage of that kind of practice in America and society ranges from about 2% to a maximum of about 7%. It breaks down at less than 1% who are tranny, who like the cross dress. It breaks down to 1% who are lesbian, 1.5% who are homosexual males, and 4%. Yeah, 4% who are bisexual. So you got maximum 7%, 7.5% of the population is that way, and they want you to think it's 50% or more, where Disney commits to making 50% of their animated characters or DC, Marvel Comics characters that way. When, you know, I have 7% of the population is that way, not 50%. You know, I was in a movie theater about 2 weeks ago, and I'm walking out of the movie, and I see this poster for a Disney animation, another one for a Disney animation. And then there's one with two men with obvious gay implications from the title, and one of them has got a handful of the other one's buttocks. And the one who's getting his butt squeezed has got a handful of the other one's buttocks squeezing that butt. And they would have an absolute freak fit if somebody put up a poster with a man squeezing a woman's behind.
Yeah, you're right about that.
I'm glad that you said that. I'm glad I asked the question for you to say what you said, because that means that it's time for... We're overdue, because we're letting 7% run everything.
Yep. See, I remember what I just said. Think of it as a new religion that is on a crusade to impose itself. It's a worldview where men are evil and being married is poison, and children should be raised so that the boys are kept in check, because somehow or another, being a boy is evil. And think of what they do to their sons. Now, on that thing, let's look at the stats. Over the last 20 years, it's pretty consistent. Only 28% of the average high school class of graduates is male. Only 32% of the college undergraduates at public colleges and universities are male. Only 36% of the college graduate students at public universities and colleges is male. Only 44% of the workforce is male. And we even have, with the group 35 and under, that thing about women getting paid less for the same work is reversed. It turns out that for the last 10 years, the settlements have all been the other way around, where the boys are getting paid less than the girls for the same work. So what's happened? We've had a situation where for the last 50 years, near as I can remember, they've never had a take your son to work week, but it's always been take your daughter to work week. It's always been something to help out the girls, but the girls, for the most part, don't do drive-bys or shoot up the school hallway. So hallway and hood, you got a problem with dysfunctional males who haven't had their man training. But, you know, nobody's paying attention to them. And what about the fact that only 44% of the workforce is male? What does that say? Other point that I find fascinating is this stat: all ethnic groups concerned put into the same hat, the stats are the same as it is for all black kids put into the same hat. There are more boy virgins 25 and under than girl virgins. Just think about it.
I'm glad you went there because one of my problems is instead of going to God, they're going to Google. And then that the abortion situation, I haven't heard anybody say anything about God created the life. They have no right to pick it anyway. A woman says she has a right to. You have a right to your body, to take care of your body. But then you should have thought about that before you did that. And God put that there, you have no right to take it.
I always got taught this. Well, back off what I got taught. What the ladies always used to get told was, dears, keep your legs closed until you get married. Or if you want to do it before you get married, use birth control. Last I checked, there's 62 effective kinds. And, you know, I had a consultant group that was the biggest fertility clinic in America as consultants when I did that show for 15 years. It was interesting that over the course of that 15-year period, only 5% of their customers were married couples. 45% of their customers were lesbian couples. And 50% of their customers were single women who just wanted to be mothers without having to be putting up with a husband or a father.
Most people don't talk about the daughter needing the father, but the daughter needs the father, too. The mother can't be a father to the daughter.
Well, you know what daddies do is, look here, baby girl, I'm not playing this. You are not going out with that young man. No way, no how. Oh, no, you better not walk out that door with that on. You better bring yourself back here. I'm standing right here, and I'm checking your purse to make sure you're not carrying something to change into. See that clock? When the hand gets there, in there, you be back in this house. I'm not playing with you. Or see, the other thing is, Daddy, could I have $50? Tamika and I are going to the mall. Maybe I just gave you 22 days ago. Daddy, please. Oh, here's 100. Don't bother me. Now, you see, when she grows up, she'll know how to handle a man. If she doesn't have a daddy, she'll put hand on hip, waggle the head, and stick her finger. Let me tell you what I'm going to make you do. What?
It makes
you. And it doesn't work. Yeah. Girls need daddies just like sons need mamas. Sometimes there is an absence, divorce, widowhood. You can't help service. Some things like that can require an absence of one or the other. You got to do what you got to do. But the system, the society, the culture used to make up for it. Now it's trying to destroy it. Hey, did anybody ever on here read BLM's mantra, what we believe, before some of us jumped them so bad they took it down? They had a bunch of frou-frou on there, and then their first principle was, quote, we are for the destruction of the traditional nuclear family.
For Black Lives Matter, yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, third from the bottom, we are a queer-affirming organization. Second from the bottom, we think with consent or agreement.
They
set
you off
out of the North
second
America.
From the bottom. What you say, check up from the bottom?
It says the one about age not being a factor in consent. Straight out of the North American Man-Boy Love Association, NAMBLA, which was a bunch of pedophiles advocating that grown males should be allowed to have sex with young boys. See, here's the other thing, too. They still say it if you go through their site and you dig it out. For every dollar you send them, one-third is retained by BLM, one-third goes to their affiliate. They say their affiliate, LGBTQIA+, and one-third goes to Act Blue, which is, in fact, the Democratic Party support organization. They also say in there, and it explains a lot of what was going on in the cities over the last 3 or so years, 4 years, and it's this. We assist in transportation, organization, and publicity for demonstrations and protests. So in other words, if you want to go burn up an area that has a lot of black businesses in it because you're protesting George Floyd getting deaded, well, we'll help you go burn down this area with all of these black businesses because you are protesting a black junkie getting done in by a white cop, which as a man I feel embarrassed about because George Floyd was 240, 250 pounds, 6'7", and he got killed by a 5'8" tall, 140-pound white man without a weapon.
Ah.
Oh, my.
They knew each other, they said.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that, Ms. Kim?
I said someone told me that they knew each other. I think I read that from.
I know there is police brutality. I'm from Memphis. Hell, I've been here 50 years. Some of the cases about when police can and cannot shoot somebody all come out of Memphis, went to the U.S. Supreme Court. I'm well aware of those cases because I was practicing law, and when one of them came out, I had just gone into private practice after running the public defender's office. So I know about them. I did federal law, too. But, I mean, really? It's always, he was scared, that's why he ran. Well, buck up and man up and stand where you're supposed to. Don't talk about your fear. I mean, it's one thing if a dude said, hey, I need to escape. I ain't going back to jail. I can understand that. But why'd you run? I was afraid. He'd been seeing what the police, so you got scared. Well, nobody taught you manhood, boy. Or,
and he fat, and the
young
guy
man.
Stopped.
Yeah. So, manhood-wise, young man, would you please explain to the court why you didn't just have a fist fight with this person that you and several others badly wounded on a drive-by? Well, you honestly, I got my ladies take care of me. They likes me pretty like I am. I can't have no scars on my face from having some kind of fist fight with somebody. I got to be looking good.
Wow. Well, yeah,
let's talk about that. All of these folk wrongfully convicted. See, the truth of the matter is 97.8% of all people in American penitentiaries pled guilty. Just a little more than 2% got found guilty by a jury. 84% to 87% of them confessed. Now, there are some innocent people in prison. Yes, there are some gross miscarriages of justice. But a lot of these things, I didn't do nothing, man. They just put a case on me. They lied. Gentlemen, the court is supposed to hear this, see the presentation of the video of the alleged confession in its chambers in 10 minutes. Madam Court Reporter, can you set up back there in that time? All right. We'll stand in recess until we complete that. You get back there and look at it, and the police say, young man, this is a very serious case. We suggest that you avail yourself of your right to an attorney. They've advised him of his rights. He signed off on them, and I've seen cops, detectives say, no, we're not going to honor this. You need to get yourself a lawyer. I don't want no lawyer. I just want to see my mama. I tell you everything you need. You just let me see my mama. And this guy has been out in your courtroom on the break trying to talk over the barrier to his homies. Hey, man, I'm upholding, man. I'm down with the colors, man. The posse, yay, man. You know, like they just trying to put a case on me. And this guy's gone through a half box of Kleenex, wiping snot out his nose and the tears off his face because he's crying like he's 7 or 8 years old, not 27. And trying to perpetrate being an OG. And it, I'll tell you anything you want. It was Stomp, Shout Dog, it wasn't me. It, you know, I'd go out and I'd say, take him into custody, that one into custody, that one and that one. Come up here. You are, all right, let the record reflect that the following individuals have been implicated in this armed robbery by the defendant during his confession. The court will observe that upon observation, he was advised 9 times of his rights. He signed a waiver 3 times. The detectives disregarded the waiver twice, advised him that the matter was extremely serious and he needed to avail himself of an attorney. One would be appointed, et cetera, if he could not afford one. But he insisted, with mucus coming out of his nostrils profusely and copious tears being shed and a lot of a box of facial tissue being used to remove the excess, he fully confessed, saying he didn't want a lawyer. He just wanted to see his mama, and they advised him 11 times his mother was not a lawyer and she couldn't be present. And since he's 27 years old, he was not entitled to be treated as a juvenile, you see. So, I mean, a lot of that stuff is ridiculous. I remember when I was defense lawyer. Well, wait a minute. Your parents, your mama's telling me you weren't even there. Is that right? No, I wasn't even there. I'm innocent. They trying to put a case on me. Well, 7 of these people ID'd you. 5 of them went to high school with you. 3 of them gave the police your mama's address. Well, see, that dude lying. I know he lying. Well, how you know he's lying? He says he ID'd you. Why was he mistaken? I know he lying. Because, see, when he say he saw me, he was lighting a cigarette, standing under the street lamp, and I was hiding behind the dumpster.
Oh, my.
I thought you weren't even there. Well, see, I wasn't there because I was dying the dumpster. He couldn't see me.
But he didn't.
Well,
he just told on himself.
Yeah, and they tell his people I'm innocent. I didn't say anything. See, they're lying. Not always. There are some people that are really wrongfully convicted, and that usually comes up with that 2%. So very, very few of them are pristinely innocent, but a lot of that 2% is not guilty because of procedural defects. And by the way, that's what a good defense lawyer does, not try to get the guilty off, but irrespective of the actual culpability of somebody, make sure the more important things taken care of. That is to keep the prosecution from getting into the very bad habit of violating due process and the law.
Yeah, but what about if the person is truly innocent?
Well, that's a shame. You need to do something about it to deal with them. America has long had a precept, the principle that says it is better that 100 guilty men go free than one innocent man be convicted. A lot of lawyers these days have never heard of it.
Yeah.
I'd get, Your Honor, we object. On what basis? Well, General, that's been a long precept of law. I got taught that my first year of law school. And I've seen it, and I think that's Justice Black, who is famous for the long exposition on Black's Law and Black's Law Dictionary. I think he put that to writing.
Yeah.
It is better that 100 guilty men go free than that one innocent man be convicted. So, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, that is what American law has as a principle. You may consider that in responding to the voir dire questions of defense counsel.
But they don't say that in courts, do they? They don't say that now, do they?
Most of them don't know it. See, you have a problem. When I became judge, I'd had hundreds of trials under my belt. I'd tried 42 first-degree murder cases where death penalty was demanded as defense lawyer and a whole bunch of lesser homicide offenses, a whole bunch of stuff. I'd been public defender, chief public defender, the first black prosecutor from Memphis, worked with equal employment opportunity, dealt with poverty law, been in private practice. You have a lot of defense lawyers now that advertise profusely, who have a lot of clients. They plead everybody out or settle every civil case because they have no trial experience. And you have judges, actually, federal and local, who the first time they ever set foot in the courthouse was when they got sworn in as a judge. We had one federal judge who's on the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. I thought it was absolutely ridiculous. She put her husband through law school. She had three children. She went to law school. That's meritorious. But what was disgusting was she took the bar and she got sworn in, and 4 days after she got sworn in, she was appointed a trial judge with unlimited jurisdiction over civil and criminal matters. That was ridiculous. And then she was confirmed as a federal judge less than 2 years out of law school.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm glad you're running for mayor. So hopefully when you get Tennessee straightened, you can work on the rest of the United States.
Okay, yep. He's running for mayor. Well, congratulations on that. Where are you, Donna?
Memphis, Tennessee.
In Memphis, okay. I was down there with Stacks for a few years.
Yeah. We need to do something about pushing Stacks. They push the Elvis Presley mansion, but they don't push Stacks. The city just spent almost $200 million on setting up a 5-star hotel a block away from the Elvis Presley mansion, where most of the people who are going there are going to be staying in Motel 6 because they can't afford that motel, and because some city council members got bribed to disregard the fact that they didn't do a proper environmental survey. And why is that important? Well, there was a massive infestation of brown recluse spiders. And on the gala opening, a bunch of people got bitten, and three of them died as a consequence of the spider bites. So the city settled those cases quietly, you see. So there are day-to-day short-term consequences. That kind of thing doesn't need to happen. $200 million there, $200 million for a downtown development to the Hyatt Hotel chain. 240 actually, and another 180 to 200 million to some developers who will have their development paid for by the city, not themselves. They acquired control of 25 acres of downtown property for just $600,000. Think about it. And the city's going to pay for building for 28 luxury units and some supporting arts studios and little cute city clubs and stuff like that.
We're not engaged. We have to get you and Miss Kim together so y'all can work on the watch. And with that, I hate to say this, I truly do, but we have just 10 minutes left before we're cut off. That's out of my control.
Oh, I do this on Friday, too, by the way. You can get me. I'll give you this number if you want to do that, and we'll support you guys. So
Oh,
it's great. Judge Joe Brown with Valerie Denise, and the call-in number is 929-477-1167, and the time is between 4 and 6 Eastern Standard Time, and just like here, if you get online before 6, you can stay on and participate in the back and forth for another hour until 7. So that's Friday. Also, check YouTube listings. You can find me with The Real Dana, and I usually do something with that on Thursday and another something Sunday afternoon. Both of them are syndicated or backed up, but you can catch us.
Well, great. Well, we definitely got to do that. We definitely, you know I'm going to do it.
All righty.
And we look forward
well,
to that.
Well, I'm going to find you, too, because I've got several questions I need to ask.
Yes, before you go,
I do want to say this. You know, Motown just renovated the museum in Hitchfield, and the artists don't get anything from the memorabilia that they're selling. So what do you think about that? You can tell me what we should be doing.
That needs to be pushed, and I'll tell you something that's going on. You remember the Paradise Lounge?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, it seats, by fire department allowance, 5,000 people. Instead of the city of Memphis putting something into renovating that, there is a guy that they gave the lease agreement to for 40 acres of land just next door to the Paradise. For $1 a year, he gets it preserved. The city cuts 40 acres of grass once a week for him, and they're trying to take the Paradise and give it to some developers rather than developing it as a black entity, and they want to run a corridor from the Paradise Club down to Beale Street. And what's happening on Beale Street is not good for the city either. It's a weird thing. It's a location where money is laundered.
Oh, that's terrible.
But that's not what Beale Street is really supposed to be.
Yeah, it's blue ceiling, but the last time we had a black club controlled by black folk that was actually the hottest thing on Beale Street was Club Royale that a guy named Royal Johnson operated. When he got too big, they went and ran a game on him to run him out of business. It's kind of interesting what they wound up doing. Steve Harvey's wife, Marjorie, was married to Royal Johnson. When they closed him down, she left him and went off with Steve Harvey. You know, I mean, I guess sisters are enterprising, but it is what it is. So,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
That's his current wife coming up.
Steve Harvey's current wife, Marjorie, used to be married to Royal Johnson, who ran the biggest club on Beale Street, Club Royale. It was black. It just took off and climbed. It was two stories. Everybody hung out there and spent plenty of money buying whiskey, wine, beer, and occasionally eating and dealing with the entertainment. So it got too big, so they tried to and managed to shut him down. But it is what it is.
Yeah.
That's really what I'm going to Stax, too.
Exactly. Why is Stax not being heavily pushed by, and get this, remember, the dynamic is that in Memphis, only 19.1%, just 19% of the registered voters are white. And we get Elvis Presley lauded, but not Stax.
Wow. But you and Miss Kim have to work on that, Judge Joe. Make that change.
I wanna see if I can find some of my friends down there. You probably know them. I'm trying to think of Betty's last name. Betty, she worked for what's that for them? We'll get together though.
Well, I've been here a half century, so there are a lot of people that I know around here.
Yeah.
One way or the
you probably know the ones I'm talking about. Albert was very good.
All right.
Better to me than Seth. You know Al? Do you
Which
know Al Bell? Pardon?
I can't hear what you're saying, ma'am. You said Al, but I didn't get...
Al Bell.
Yes.
You know Al?
I haven't seen him in a while, but I know him. I know okay. Al Bell.
Well, I'm talking about the Al Bell that was vice president of Stax Records. But really, he was the one that was running it. Jim Stewart was smart enough to let him do it.
I have met the gentleman, yes. He's getting up there.
Okay. That's something. I'm just saying, Al Bell is the one that Isaac Hayes. You're familiar with the movie Watch Stacks?
With the movie what now?
Watch Stacks.
Are you saying Watch Stacks? Stacks?
It's a movie about the writers.
Watch Stacks.
Right. All of the stacks artists went to California.
Oh, Watch Stacks. Oh, okay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, all right. I haven't seen that movie.
Well, all of Isaac Hayes, Rufus Thomas, Bartek, Carla Thomas, everybody. I opened it up with Lift Every Voice and Star Spangled Banner.
Well, I know knew Isaac Hayes well. I knew Rufus Thomas. He got me to eat Roy Oysters the first time. I know most of those people. Yes, or knew them.
I'm still college still down
there. Did you know Chuck Scruggs with WDIA?
Yes, we did. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I have a bone to pick with the Civil Rights Museum. They list Attorney DeArmy Bailey as the founder. He's not. Chuck Scruggs out of WDIA, Randy Wade, formerly with the Sheriff's Department, Mr. Bobo, who ran that, had nothing to do with gay stuff back then. Remember the gay hawk? It was over on Thomas. And A.W. Willis, and not Walter Bailey, the lawyer, but Walter Bailey that owned the Civil Rights Museum. We all got together, and that Mr. Bailey wanted to sell the Lorraine Motel. Some developers wanted to tear it down and put up a new gentrified structure. So he got the idea that maybe there was something else to do. So Chuck Scruggs got all of us together, and I came up with the idea to make a civil rights museum out of it, which we decided would be a good thing. And then attorney A.W. Willis, who has a long history with being on the right side of civil rights. He was a good brother, now dead. He got all the paperwork done, everything signed, and we reviewed it at Mr. Bobo's restaurant/club one afternoon. And he was going to send it off that afternoon, but he collapsed in his office and died 4 days later of rapidly advancing pancreatic cancer. His secretary called around, and she got DeArmy Bailey's office to agree to send the stuff off. So DeArmy put a cover letter in there, sent it off to the state, and when it came back, that's how he moves in to be declared the founder of the Civil Rights Museum, and he did absolutely nothing to get it together.
Mm.
But you see, Chuck Scruggs with WDIA needs to take a lot of credit because he's the one that put the meetings together that resulted in the place not being torn down, but as a civil rights museum. And by the way, I was the last judge on the James Earl Ray matter. And I'll tell you this, James Earl Ray did not kill Dr. King. The FBI provided the murder weapon, the ammunition used to murder King, and they recruited a two-man hit team from the Quantico Marine Sniper Base, where the FBI training, one of the FBI training academies is also located. The shot was fired from the fire station tower. The reason a lot of people are pointing at the bushes, right across the street on the same level. The reason a lot of people think that the shot, it came from the fire station, not the flop house nor the bushes. The reason people think that the shot came from the fire, from the bushes or the flop house, is because if a rifle was fired where it was fired from, the sound echoes off of the face of the Lorraine Motel, and it's cast right there to the bushes, to the flop house bathroom window. The window is right over top of the bushes.
I guess I'm gonna call it a day, but this has been excellent. And Judge Joe Brown, I don't know if you're a comedian, but you're a great imitator. You were so great in imitating them people as you talked.
I learned years ago that one of the best ways of getting to a jury is understanding things with the mind of a stand-up comedian who's good. You look at things.